cross-examination by the enforcement team of the discharger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do not have any cross-examination, but we do have some comments that Harvey Packard will make.
Okay, well, it's not time for his comments, is it? We go to comments by interested persons?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And our interested persons' cards, Mr. Briggs?
Yes.
Somewhere nearby? Okay. How many do we have?
We have two.
Okay. Two cards. Dan Berman and Gordon Hensley. Okay. Mr. Hensley? And then Mr. Berman? And if there's any other member of the public?
Filled out two cards.
Two cards. This is a combined item, Mr. Hensley, so 3 minutes.
Can I have three for both? Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. Let's see. We were anticipating addressing both. On the MMP order, we support staff's recommendation and the SEP proposal. However, we do urge that you would consider imposing the maximum liability. Not counting the 90-day grace period for the plant upgrade, there were 42 serious or chronic violations, 30 of them after the plant upgrade, for one full year at that point. And this is an institution that you're dealing with that understands that a violation of the law is a violation no matter how small the degree of the failure to comply. They also understand that continued violations carry increased punishment. They're facing sort of the version of 42 strikes policy in front of you today. They also understand that chronic and continual violation risks the maximum punishment. You have been very patient and understanding with this discharger, but advancing your progressive discipline policy that you've been using with them will likely get the attention of the administration and will ultimately help the prison to get the funding they need to improve their performance. Again, we urge the maximum penalties and support the SEP. On the chlorine issue, a little more significant issue, we believe, considering the high value of the receiving waters and the significant investment of state and federal tax dollars to improve the water quality in the Chorro Valley watershed and Morro Bay National Estuary, we urge the maximum penalty on this one also. Staff packet has included evidence of fish kill resulting from a chlorine discharge and the significance of chlorine toxicity. Conversely, the discharger has offered only excuses and no defense of their actions. In the June 12 letter, which is in your packet, I'd like to call your attention to that. On page 2, it's clear that an affirmative decision was made by the men's colony to avoid fully upgrading their plant. They chose to do chlorine disinfection when your board had cautioned them and requested that they go to ultraviolet disinfection. And yet they stand before you and tell you that this is a state-of-the-art project. those issues outlined in that letter and page 7 of your staff report, I think, go directly to their culpability and the economic benefit and why a higher level of penalty would be correct. This in the staff's comment, item G, page 7, under degree of culpability, the current system is not adequate to prevent the releases of chlorine residual above the effluent limits. The continued use of chlorine disinfection maintains the potential for receiving water impacts to aquatic life. And they recommend, again, the conversion to ultraviolet disinfection. CMC has acknowledged that the recent upgrade, I'll finish,
okay,
was not adequate to meet the standards, and they knowingly took the risk. We recommend that either the maximum liability be assessed or a time schedule be in place that would direct the replacement of the chlorine with UV disinfection. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hensley. Dan Berman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Dan Berman, and I did take the oath. I'm the director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, working to protect and restore the Morro Bay Estuary and the waters that flow into it, including Choro Creek. Obviously, our first concern is for the health of the water quality and the health of the organisms living in the creek and the bay. We're extremely concerned about all these violations, but in particular about the chlorine violations because of the extreme toxicity of chlorine to aquatic organisms. I do want to make the point that we very much appreciate the interest and voluntary action on the discharger's part, both today and in the past, when these fines have resulted from spills and violations of the plant, that their willingness to work with us to put that money to good use in the watershed, and that is entirely voluntary on their part, and it's led to some very good projects. That said, we would much rather not have any of this money. We would rather not have spills and not have violations. One of my biggest concerns when I spoke before you in September on these same violations was the notification process that we were unaware at the estuary program, and as far as I know, the Department of Fish and Game and other agencies were unaware of these chlorine spills for many, many months after they were occurring. And I didn't find out, you know, about them until the order came out last summer for the September hearing. And so that's very concerning to me. I understand that the regional board staff are working on a revised permit that would require notification as part of the permit, and I hope that both dischargers and regional board staff, we can figure out some sort of process so that both dischargers and staff immediately notify relevant fish and wildlife agencies when there is a violation that has any possibility of being toxic to aquatic life. It is true and unfortunate that in proposing a SEP for minimum penalties, a discharger does open themselves up to a hearing that poses a risk from their perspective, and that does seem like what's happened here. That said, I'm glad that we're having this hearing and that we're talking about this chlorine and as not as a minimum penalty. I'm happy to answer any questions about the SEP. We've been pursuing the same project. It's been very effective. And I guess with that, again, I think, I'm interested in what Mr. Hensley said of if there is a mechanism to move away from this chlorine disinfection system that the board can help expedite. I think that would be advantageous, frankly, to everyone. And I guess with that, again, the notification process, both at the CMC and at every plant that's discharging chlorinated effluent, I think needs to be looked at to ensure that we're sitting here wondering whether there was fish kills. We shouldn't be wondering. We should know, and there should be a process that, that gets fish and game out there immediately. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Okay, that's it for our speakers, our interested persons. Rebuttal testimony by discharger. Yeah, rebuttal testimony.
Well, yes, let me do have one thing I'd like to comment.
Good.
I think Mr. Hensley misapprehends the plant design circumstance that led to this particular plant. At the time that that plant was designed, and the state process is you get your funding, and it's like a four-year cap outlay process, and in the beginning year and a half, you're doing planning and obtaining all of the necessary permits and so forth and doing your environmental impact. And then usually in year three, you start your construction. And if you have to go back to the beginning, you've just wasted the last 2 years because the process is pretty inflexible. We were at exactly that point with this plant based on a plant design with effluent limits that we understood. We inquired of the board as to whether there would be changes in the new permit and what those changes would be. And the board was unable to tell us, and for reasons I fully understand, wasn't willing to guess at what they thought the new limits might be, and so said, we can't tell you. So we got started with the plant, actually had broken ground and were constructing that plant when we found out what the new discharge limits were. And our engineers said, this might be a little problematic in terms of the chlorine dechlor process and the trihalomethane limit that you have. There wasn't a concern about chlorine spills. And in point of fact, I think we've got those solved. At least we haven't had any since last August. But the concern was the trihalomethane limit. And I honestly believe that realistically, that limit is going to be very, very difficult for us to meet, and it's proving to be very, very difficult for San Luis Obispo to meet with the same limits that we have using a chlor-dechlor process.
Mr. Swanberg, what limits were tightened between the old permit and the new permit?
You know? Just about all of them. But the trihalomethanes probably went way, way down from what they were before. And do you remember?
We
didn't even have a THM limit. That's right. We didn't even have one. So, but it wasn't as though the board had said to us, as was suggested, gee, you guys ought to go with a UV system. That didn't happen.
Right.
You know, I just want people to understand that. The board has never given us an advice along those lines that we have not followed.
Right.
If the board had suggestions as to how we might improve the process, which generally the board doesn't do, they leave that in the bailiwick of the discharger. But if they ever have, we followed them.
Okay.
That's all I have.
All right. Rebuttal testimony by enforcement team.
Harvey Packard. I just want to make a few quick points. We did not present any evidence of impacts to the chlorine violations other than the August 21st incident. And that's because there is no evidence of effects downstream in the receiving waters. We don't have, I mean, we could have looked at individual violations and stream flow data and looked at the duration of the violation, for example, but even if we'd done that, we still don't have any evidence of downstream effects. So we didn't take that route. We went with the understanding that chlorine is toxic, and therefore, in consideration of the factors, we came to the conclusion that the toxicity mainly requires it's appropriate for the penalty to be above the minimum because of the degree of toxicity. And that's where we came up with the number. It wasn't because we looked at each individual violation. It's because the chlorine itself is toxic and therefore appropriate to have a higher penalty. So we stand by the statement in our report that those violations may have caused degradation or of the beneficial uses or impacts to aquatic life. We don't have any evidence of it and can't present it, but we agree. We stand by the statement that it could have caused effects. And that's the only point I wanted to make.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Packard? Mr. Hayashi?
Can you explain to me trihalomethane, and can we do anything about this requirement?
Trihalomethanes are several products, actually, that are the result of chlorination of water. And when the chlorine mixes with organic materials in the wastewater, it produces these compounds. The limits that are in the permit are based on the California Toxics Rule, and they're based not on aquatic protection, I believe. I'm pretty sure, but they're based on the drinking water beneficial use. So the chlorine is more sensitive for the aquatic life, and the THMs are based on not direct consumption but effects on aquatic life and as that moves up through the food chain. There is a difference between the drinking water standard for THMs and receiving water standards. It's because drinking water standards take into account the costs of treating the water and also takes into consideration the fact that the only way to remove THMs from drinking water is to not chlorinate it. You've got to chlorinate water, so they take that balance into consideration when they establish the drinking water standards. There are ways to reduce the amount of THMs in your effluent. The easiest way is to switch to some other sort of pathogen reduction, such as ultraviolet treatment.
Well, given in today's environment that there is no option other than chlorine at this time, what is there something that we can do
well,
to the requirement?
There is, actually. The current permit has a compliance schedule for reaching those effluent limitations, and the current permit includes interim effluent limits. And so the violations that you see are not only violations of the very low standards in the toxics rule, but they're also violations of the higher interim limit, which is in the permit. When the 5-year term of this permit is up the limit will revert back down to the lower CTR number, and they're going to be even in more, have even a harder time meeting their effluent limitations if they don't get the problem resolved by then.
So what do we do?
We, you know, the fix is in place, and they're trying to get funding. I don't know what more we can do or the board can do, but we've heard from CMC they're doing everything they can to get funding to get the project built.
So we will just, so this this trihalomethane will always trigger a violation?
It will likely continue to trigger violations.
Just to be clear, there is an alternative disinfection, and that's ultraviolet disinfection, which they are pursuing, and Mr. Swanberg mentioned the funding problem with it as far as a freeze on capital improvement projects.
Yeah,
they are pursuing that, which is likely, very likely, to solve the THM problem.
But from between now and the time that we solve that problem and they get the funding, what happens? Do the fines just continue to pile up?
Well, there's no flexibility to the regional boards as far as the mandatory minimum penalties.
There's nothing we can do about the for the requirement.
Not that I know of.
I don't think. Well, Francis can answer this. I don't think the board is allowed a term longer than 5 years to have interim limits on that.
I guess the only thing is there any basis for changing the interim limit? And I don't know if that's even legally possible. But because right now, are they still accruing violations for the interim limit or not?
Not every time, but every once in a while.
So I don't know if that's possible, but that would be the only thing I can think of, because the federal law requires the limit and only allows a certain time to have an interim limit.
So okay. We are what we are.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Any other comments, Harvey, for your rebuttal?
No, none at this time.
Okay. And then closing statement by Mr. Swanberg on behalf of the discharger. Okay, thank you. And a closing statement by the enforcement team.
Let's make a couple other points. The 42 violations in the MMP complaint are violations that have been reported by the discharger. They do not have any basis to deny them, and the law is clear that at least a minimum penalty applies. So I think we're all in agreement there, both the prosecution team and the discharger. In addition, we support the proposed SEP. I personally have been out to some of these sites with Mr. Berman and have seen the effectiveness of them, and we agree that they're a good way to spend some of this violation money. On the chlorine ACL, again, these are violations that the discharger does not refute. And I think the only matter that is under discussion is the appropriate amount of the penalty. Mm-hmm. We've discussed and presented our basis for that amount, and we believe that $7,000 per chlorine violation is the appropriate amount, and propose that the board adopt those orders.
Mm-hmm. And Harvey, did the enforcement team just pick an average number, a dollar amount per violation, and kind of blended the two with the ones that were over 2 milligrams per liter versus all the others?
Correct. And there, as David mentioned, the effect of these violations probably varied. You know, some of them were more severe than others, and mm-hmm. we didn't go through the analysis and analyzing the factors for each individual violation. But we went through the factors on the group as a whole and came to the conclusion that that was the appropriate amount. Hmm.
Let me bounce something off you, because I looked at the numbers myself and just tried to come up with something that I thought might be another way to approach this.
Okay.
And that is, if we take all of the violations that exceed the 2.0, and I believe there's 7.
There should be 8.
Are there 8?
There are 9.
Well, there's 9 that are 2.0 or greater.
Include the 2.
Okay. I didn't include the two because it's not, doesn't exceed two.
Okay.
So we'd have to adjust that again. I took, then take those nine, apply the maximum, and then take the others and apply the minimum.
Okay.
That's kind of a way of also balancing it, but it takes into account frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do come up with a number that's lower than 140. Does that seem like a reasonable way to?
It seems reasonable. We haven't done that evaluation ourselves, but I'm sure there's more than one way to look at it.
Right.
And that seems like a valid way to look at it.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be part of the board's deliberation,
right,
as opposed to questions to,
right,
the enforcement team.
Right. I just wanted a sense for whether the enforcement team has considered an approach like that,
mm-hmm,
and its recommendation, but the board can decide what it wants to do. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes testimony and comment at this point, so it's within the board's purview right now. Mr. Hodgen.
Before the board, is this for more questions or just?
I just wanted to comment that we have some gentlemen here from Fish and Game, and I was,
yeah,
wondering if they had anything to add to this discussion.
Yes,
yeah,
I do, actually.
You do?
My name is Dennis Mishnick. I'm with Fish and Game, and I took the oath. I apologize. I didn't know that I needed to fill out a card to talk, but if I could have just a couple of minutes
to say
a few things.
Okay. But then we'll allow the discharger to make any comments,
sure,
or cross-examine, right, you if they feel it necessary.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, I'm a fisheries biologist, and I just wanted to make a couple quick statements. The steelhead that are in Choro Creek are South Central steelhead, which are federally threatened fish, and salmonids, which steelhead are part of. A concentration of 0.01 milligrams per liter can kill adults, and a concentration of 0.006 milligrams per liter can kill juveniles. When we went out to the fish kill, we saw four juveniles that were dead, and that's what we collected. And then the only other thing I'd like to add is we have been doing a project on Choro Creek, which is the Choro Creek Pike Minnow Removal Project. We're removing pike minnow, which are non-native and detrimental to the steelhead population. So last year, we electroshocked the whole entire Choro Creek area. And when we electroshocked the area below the outfall, for two-thirds of a mile from the outfall downstream, we did not catch one single steelhead. When we got immediately upstream of the outfall, we did start catching steelhead. That data has not been totally analyzed, so that's the only statement I can say at this time, but yeah. And then the only other thing I would like to add is the amount of water that's going down Choro Creek is not really affected unless it is spilling from Choro Reservoir upstream. And I'm not sure if Choro Reservoir spilled last year. As far as I know, it did not. Thank you.
So you're saying then that the flow downstream from the discharge point would be pretty constant based on the discharge itself?
Exactly. Yeah, it wouldn't really fluctuate like if you had a high rain year where it's spilling over the reservoir. That's what causes Choro Creek to really, you know, turn into a raging stream. So,
okay.
I just have one,
sure,
question again. The association between the pike work that you were doing, is it the date that you were there?
Oh, yeah, that's very important. Thank you. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was there in October.
Okay.
I don't have the exact date, but it was like mid-October that we did the area directly downstream of the outfall.
Okay.
In 2008 or 2007?
2008. So, yeah, yeah, so it was like after, you know, the August thing, August, September, yeah, 2 months after. So it was about 2 months after the chlorine spill.
And just to remind the board that the violations in issue are before that date, so that information may not necessarily be relevant to the,
yeah,
violations.
Okay. And then, you know, other than the four dead juvenile steelhead, there was probably roughly 150 other fish that were killed in an area 300 feet downstream of the outlet pipe. We didn't see any fish that were alive, and crayfish were also included.
And that was the August?
That was the August
21st,
yeah. That's the only time I had, you know, was out there other than when I was doing the thing in October. You know, we were called, me and a coworker of mine went out there that afternoon.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Swanberg, any questions? Okay.
Can
any additional comments that you'd like to
make? Can you spell your
make?
Name
okay.
for the record?
Sure. My last name is M-I-C-H-N-I-U-K.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Thanks. Chairman, may I ask a question real
yes.
quickly, procedurally, with respect to Jorge Leon with the Office of Enforcement. Good morning. With respect to how you handle the deliberation, it might be a good idea to take up the MMP first, then the discretionary, and conclude on the MMP first, because I suspect we're going to have a discussion with respect to the language on both orders, and it just might be more orderly to handle it that way. Just a suggestion.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's on item 11, it's not contested, and so the main issue there is with the supplemental environmental project and the appropriate language for that order as far as our recommendation as the advisory team.
I want to just say that one of the, if you're considering doing the supplemental environmental project, there's one concern I have, and that is that the proposed language on page 2 of the proposed changes has a paragraph that's just not legally correct, and that is that it would allow the board to reopen the order and would allow the board to extend the due dates related to the supplemental environmental project. And once the board adopts an order becomes final and the board can't come back and revisit it. So I just recommend that you just delete the part that says the board reserves judgment to reserves jurisdiction to modify the order and just leave it that upon the request of the discharger.
Where are you reading from, Francis?
It's on the supplemental sheet that you got. That's the mandatory penalty language with proposed language modifications. February 5th is the date in your packet.
This deals with 12?
11. 11.
Francis, I'm not 11. Sure that everybody got that. In fact, I don't think that the discharger's representative received it. I can show them the copy that I have.
Do you have one?
I don't think I have it.
Is this it?
That's the SEP proposal.
No, that's part of it.
I don't think we have it.
I think you're the only one that got it.
Oh, you didn't. You guys didn't pass it around to everybody? Okay. Okay, well, let's see if you can bring it up and. Okay, so what this would do is the finding number 14 would be added to clarify that the board can, in lieu of a portion of the mandatory penalty, allow a certain amount go to the supplemental environmental project. So that's finding 14. And so of that of the total amount of $126,000, the board could allow $70,500 to go to the project. Then the next finding 15 would describe the project. I think David already provided that and showed you. Then keep going. And then here would be the order part. So the order would be to order them to pay the $126,000 and of that direct $70,500 to the project. And then it would keep going. That would provide a report to the board that the project was actually completed, and then interim semi-annual reports. The problem part I have is that upon request of the discharger, that paragraph there, The second sentence we just need to delete because the board cannot by law reopen an order once it, this type of order once adopted. And then the first sentence, it says, or the regional board may extend the dates. Well, once the order is adopted, the regional board is out of the picture, but the executive officer could do that. So you could, so I recommend that you just delete on the first sentence, or the Central Coast Water Board. And that would be my recommendations to correct
and,
that.
And that that language, that sentence there, upon request of the discharger, could serve to satisfy CMC's, Mr. Swanberg's, request regarding the 90 days.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no legal problem with changing the, it to be 90 days for that purpose, for the supplemental environmental project purpose. It isn't, is not possible. In the next page, it has, if you keep going, David, it has to pay the remainder, which is $55,500. And by law, the order has to say that you have to pay that within 30 days. That would then become a discretionary enforcement issue to not enforce if they couldn't pay it within the 30 days, but you can't, you're required to say 30 days at this point. But the supplemental environmental project, you have discretion to allow as much time as needed to complete it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a question
sure.
to that then? Are you recommending there would be no time certain that the money be appropriated for this the SEP project?
No, the time, there would be time certain. It just, the order would allow the executive officer to
have the discretion.
Have the discretion to say, oh, I get it that you can't get the money from the, you know, in the budget, and you can get more time to complete it. So that is okay.
But Mr. Swanberg, no IOUs.
No vouchers, no
IOUs. Vouchers.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Really quickly, the prosecution team concurs with all the changes that Francis has just described. We think that that makes a lot of sense to go ahead and modify the order as suggested. One final recommendation would be to add to the addition of 15. David, would you switch that back up to show number 15? This paragraph describes the SEP that's proposed, and it might be a good idea to say toward the end here that a copy of the SEP proposal is attached as attachment A, so there's no question about what the SEP proposal is.
Right. That's a good idea.
And I do have one other minor suggestion, is that in the if you keep going down to the bottom, to the last part, this requires a check to be submitted to the State Water Board for the $55,500, and the check should just be, you should add to this that there be the check marked with ACL order number, whatever the order is, so that sometimes they get lost in the finance office and they're not sure where it goes. So if you just put on the check a reference to the order, that makes it work.
Is there an opportunity that I can speak? This is the first time I've seen this final language as well. I just saw something.
It's up to you.
Quickly.
In Order 15, I think it said, and the California Conservation Corps will provide labor. We use the Conservation Corps sometimes on these projects, but I wouldn't, I guess I would rather have more flexibility than that. They're not always interested in building fences, and at the moment they're proposed to be eliminated entirely. So I'd rather have, we usually just put it out to bid and get the best price we can, and depending on who the landowner wants to work with. So
we could take out the word will and replace it with may.
That would be perfect. Thank you.
Well, now the National Estuary Program will administer the project, but we don't have to put in who's doing the labor.
That's right.
Just delete the labor part.
All right.
Would what's up there on the screen there suffice?
Okay.
Just
yeah.
Just leave that there.
Fine. Okay. Well, should we take up this one first?
I think that would be best.
As has been suggested. Okay. Any board further board discussion on this? Mr. Hodgson?
We've talked about a number of changes. I just want to make sure the discharger is still not contesting this as modified.
We concur with the changes.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Sure.
I move the approval of lost the wording here. Anyway, the document that we're looking at as modified.
And that would be the MMP order number. And are we changing the order, Mr.
Yes, Harris? It's R3 2009-0028. Right.
Okay, so that has been moved with the suggested changes.
I'll second.
And can I, before you vote, can I just clarify the changes you want? Okay, the first would be to change, to delete reference to the Conservation Corps and finding 15.
Right.
The second would be to extend for 90 days the due date on paying the money to the foundation for the project. The third change would be to delete reference to the water board in the fourth hereby ordered paragraph. And the fourth change would be to add a phrase that to mark on the check ACL order number, what Roger just said, 2009-28.
0028.
It's actually not the ACL, it's the mandatory minimum penalty
correct.
Order.
I mean, so the penalty
yes.
order. Right,
right. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
It's agenda item 11.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
I had one more other than just the reference to. You know, an attachment.
Oh, right, and then attach a reference to attachment A in the finding 15.
Right, with the referencing the SCP itself.
Correct.
Okay. So that covers the recommended changes. Any other further board discussion on this? Okay, we have a motion. All those in favor?
Aye. We need a second.
Dr. Hunter?
We need a second. Oh, Ms.
Yeah, there was a second.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. Let's move on to then the AC.